Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Live until the 9 p.m., so thank you all for tuning in tonight. We really appreciate it. We got a big show that's going to happen for you, and I'm looking forward to presenting it to you. It's an interesting and yet a touchy subject tonight regarding one man and his position for a sports organization. So we're going to be talking about this throughout the night. things have been kind of different, you know, the past week or so. A lot has gone on. First of all, congrats to both the Connecticut's men's and women's basketball teams for winning their championships, respectively. Especially the women's, who went an entire season undefeated, 40-0, I believe. How about that? That's pretty impressive to me. So congratulations to them. That was pretty big, pretty big. Also, we got some, I guess you could say, some emphatic statements, some true hard-hitting statements from one guy by the name of Adam Jones, and it's not the Adam Jones that you think it is. Trust me. We're going to get into that a little bit. We also got some basketball, and we saw a game. I caught the game last night between the Nets and the Heat, and the Nets did what no team has done to the Miami Heat in quite some time, go 4-0 against them during the regular season. That's pretty impressive. And, you know, the last two games in Miami both really came down to the wire. And if you saw what happened at the end, some people say, well, was that a foul? Was it not a foul? Was it intentional? You know, it's just always a lot of, you know, speculations and things of that nature as to, you know, did it really happen? You know, did it really go down? And, you know, why didn't the referees make the call? You know, so there's always a lot of speculations, which, you know, a lot of guys, they always try to find out and everything. They want to know if it was true, did it really happen? You know, so just think about that. Think about that for a second. You know, let that kind of linger in your mind, because I know a lot of y'all out there are Miami Heat fans anyway. So just think about this, you know. But big ups to the Nets. They are playing phenomenal the last month and a half now. They are really playing some good basketball. And they're not at full strength either. Kevin Garnett did not play last night, wasn't in uniform. He's been dealing with back spasms for much of the season, especially the second half of the season. But yet you got the toughness of Paul Pierce. You got the toughness of Joe Johnson, Deron Williams, some of the other players that were playing well last night. It was big. It was big. Your playoff positions are being determined. And like I said, there's going to be a lot that's going to be determined. Most of these teams have about 4 or 5 games left. So by the middle of next week, we'll know more about who's going to be in, who's not going to be in, especially in the Western Conference, because you got 3 teams fighting for 2 playoff spots. So so a lot of that is going to be determined. And I'm a little bit excited. I'm a little bit excited as far as to who's going to, you know, who's going to make the run, who's going to get in. So we got that to talk about. We do have some sad news to pass along. Actually 3. One has it doesn't have anything to do with sports. It's still a big loss. Just based on what this man meant to the world of entertainment. First of all, I gotta say, rest in peace to former actor, former entertainer, Mickey Rooney, who passed away just a few days ago. He died on Sunday over the weekend. He died at the age of 93. And it was a sad death, you know. It was one of those deaths where, you know, he died in his sleep at his stepson's home in North Hollywood, Los Angeles. I mean, what's not to know about the guy? The guy has done so much. I mean, he acted for a long time. This guy did so many projects, a lot of documentaries, a lot of different, you know, projects, a lot of different selective amount of films, a lot of stage work, television. I mean, he done just about everything, and he's going to be missed. And as an actor, I'm just so inspired by him, you know, by what he did, what he meant to the acting world. Just a phenomenal entertainer, a really cool guy, really colorful, awesome personality, just a really, really nice guy. From what I've seen, he was always friendly. Just a great man. Just a great man. And he's going to be missed. So my prayers and thoughts go out to him and his family during this time. And once again, rest in peace to him. Also, rest in peace to the Ultimate Warrior. And this death really struck because it was so crazy that, first of all, congratulations to him for being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this past weekend on the eve of WrestleMania. He gave a speech, and then on Monday night, on the episode of Raw, he delivered another speech in front of the fans, and it was the first time he had been in a WWE ring since 1996. He left, went over to WCW, went over to the New Wrestling Federation, and then came back this year, was inducted into the Hall of Fame. I'm happy for him for that to happen. And it was crazy. From what I heard, they said he died yesterday. They said he collapsed at around 5:50, you know, 6 p.m. while walking to his car with his wife in Arizona outside of their hotel. And I think that they were actually at a WWE event. I think that Raw was held in the state of Arizona. From what I heard, it sounded like he was from people backstage that said that they noticed that he appeared to be in constant pain. They said he looked sweaty, looked very uncomfortable. He looked weak. He didn't look like himself. And he basically just kind of looked he kind of looked out of shape. Kind of looked like his unusual self, and they noticed it, but you know, it just looked bad. It just looked bad, you know. But a lot of wrestlers paid tribute to him, as they should. The Hulk Hogan, the Kevin Ashes, those guys, they all paid tribute to him, rightfully so. And rest in peace to him. He died at the age of 54. And you know, he'll forever be known as one of the greatest. One of the greatest, especially one of the greatest in that era. And one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. Also, I wanted to say another death happened to a young girl by the name of Lacey Halsworth, who was also known as Princess Lacey. And her death was just such a shock because it just came out of the blue. She's so young. She has such bright future ahead of her. You know, you hate to hear about these deaths that happen to people, you know, well into their life. 8 years old, that's, to me, that's well into someone's life, you know, and it's a little bit hurtful, unfortunately. It's very hurtful. She's certainly going to be missed. She died, like I said, she died at 8 years old. She's very close to the University of Michigan State, now former Michigan State player Adrian Payne. He's expected to enter the NBA draft this year. Two of them had a big brother, little sister relationship. She's very close to the organization. Tom Izzo and the rest of those guys. Even Dick Vitale, the former University of Detroit and former Detroit Pistons coach. It's hurtful. It's hurtful. She died of cancer, and you know, my prayers and blessings go out to her and her family during this time, and to the entire organization at University of Michigan State. It's hurtful. It's hurtful. You know, anytime that something like this happens, you know, you don't want that to happen to anybody, and you know, what can you do? You know, I always tell people, live your life to the fullest. You know, live your life to the fullest. And I also experienced another death that was a little bit more personal to me. A friend of mine who was also a film mentor, her name was Yvonne Butler, who I've known for about 5 years now. She was always very uplifted, very full of positive energy. We used to crack jokes on each other a lot of the time. I got the better of it the most, but She passed away on, from what I heard, on April Fool's. They said she had a heart attack. She died, and I think she's like 57, somewhere around there, somewhere between 65 and 60. I had met her last year for the first time, and we were working on a film called My Girl's a Genie. We just started shooting during the fall of last year. We shot a few days, and that was the last time I saw her. The last time I saw her was the second Saturday, October 12th of last year, and we were just getting ready to start back the project this month. And from what I heard from the director, Shadow, on his page, I just happened to go on his page one day, and I just saw that he posted. I was like, what? And then I went and looked on the film's fan page on Facebook, and I was just like shocked, just totally shocked. You know, it really kind of hit close to home a little bit. And I always tell people, live your life to the fullest. Just live your life to the fullest. You never know when it's going to be taken away. So my thoughts and prayers go out to her and her family, and rest in peace to my former mentor and my friend. And again, blessings and prayers go out to her and her family. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little, we're going to talk some basketball. We got the big subject with Joe Dumars. Seems like he's on his way out the door, so we're going to cover that. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We're approaching the 7:30 time. We got some NBA that we're going to jump to. Of course, NBA is going to be the theme of tonight's show for the most part. I talked about Joe Dumars, about how he's planning on possibly resigning by the end of the season. Right now, his team, Pistons, are losing in Cleveland to the Cavaliers 18-11. We have the Brooklyn Nets coming off a good and yet big win over Miami last night. They're currently losing in Orlando 11-10. Those two games are in the first quarter. Charlotte is winning in Washington 16-8. That game is also halfway through the first quarter. And we have Philadelphia 76ers losing in Toronto right now 14-13. That game's also in the first quarter. Later tonight, we got the Boston Celtics at the Atlanta Hawks. That game's getting ready to tip off in about 10 minutes. That's a big win for the Hawks if they want to hold off the New York Knicks for that 8th and final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Now, the Hawks came off a big win on the road over Indiana this past weekend, but they laid an egg at home to Detroit the following night. Bad timing. You got the Knicks on your heels. You need to win that game. You need to win this game. You need to beat the Celtics at any cost. The Phoenix Suns will take on the New Orleans Pelicans at 8 p.m. The Phoenix Suns need to win this game. They are one of three teams, including the Mavericks and the Grizzlies, fighting for the last two spots. And technically, you got Golden State into the mix a little bit, even though they are number six right now. But they're not too far off. And they could slip, too, if they're not careful. We got the Pacers getting ready to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. That game will also take place at 8 p.m. Head coach of the Pacers, Frank Vogel, is planning to rest all five of his starters for this game. Some sort of extreme measures, I guess, just to kind of give the guys a little psyche advantage a little bit. The Pacers need to win this game. If they win tonight, and if Miami loses to Memphis on the road, that game also at 8 p.m., then the Pacers will regain the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. But they need the to lose, though, in order for that to happen. Right now, Indiana, they're only a half game back of Miami. And they got to hope that Miami loses. And that's going to be a tough one for the Heat because Memphis is fighting for their playoff lives. Speaking of another team that's fighting for their playoff lives, well, technically they are kind of fighting for their playoff lives, but it seems like they have already been eliminated. The Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be hosting the Chicago Bulls tonight at 8 p.m. I think Minnesota is pretty much out of it at this rate, but they could still finish the season strong with the likes of Rick Rubio, Kevin Love, and some of the other young talents on their team. It would be Minnesota's best finish possibly since, 2004, somewhere around that time when, Garnett was on the team and they had guys like Latrell Sprewell, Sam Cassell, Troy Hudson, the rest of those guys. So let's see if the Minnesota Timberwolves can finish out the season on a positive note. At 9 p.m. tonight, we got the Houston Rockets on the road against the Denver Nuggets. Houston still has a lot to prove. They came off a big win over the Lakers last night on the road without Dwight Howard, who did not suit up for the game. Basically, the Rockets are... they're trying to make a statement, basically. That's pretty much what it is. They're trying to make a statement. They realize that, winning this game will go a long way for them. Right now, they're behind San Antonio in the Southwest Division. They're 7.5 games back, and they're not going to catch them. San Antonio pretty much have that division wrapped up. But basically, they could still try and get quite possibly a higher seed, maybe try and surpass the Clippers. They're 2.5 games back of them for the number three spot. Currently, they're in the fourth spot. If the playoffs were to start today, they would be facing the Portland Trail Blazers. And that would be an interesting matchup between two young teams that both have a lot to prove. That would be a good matchup for Houston. It really would be. It would be a good matchup for both teams, actually. So right now, the Houston Rockets, they are still trying to win. Still trying to win games and still trying to finish strong going into the postseason. Coming up at 10 p.m. tonight, we got the Sacramento Kings against those Portland Trail Blazers. The Trail Blazers, they kind of been struggling a little bit down the stretch for a while. They won 6 of their last 10, though. They just came off a win a few nights ago. There came a time where the Portland Trail Blazers were in first place in the Western Conference. Now they're all the way down to fifth, meaning they're not going to get any home court advantage against nobody at this rate. Now, they're 2.5 back of Houston for the fourth spot. They're 5 back of the Clippers, but it doesn't look like they're going to catch either team. So it looks like they're going to have to settle for that fifth spot. But if they're not careful, they got Golden State, who's a game and a half behind them on their trail. They could slip. So this is a game they need to win, and they should win. They're taking on the lowly Sacramento Kings. They need to win this game. And at 10:30, we got the game of the night. The OKC Thunder against those LA Clippers. That's actually the second of the ESPN doubleheaders. The first will be the Miami Heat against the Memphis Grizzlies at 8 o'clock. You can switch over to that game. Also, while listening to the Rocket Sports Breakdown, that OKC Clipper game will be on at 10:30 p.m. tonight. So unless you got a curfew, I advise you check out this game. This is another big heater rivalry between two teams that really don't like each other. It started with the whole late Griffin dunk over Kendrick Perkins a few years ago, and you know, the Serge Ibaka punching Blake Griffin in the crotch area last year. It was just, it was nasty. It was nasty. Things have been nasty between these two teams and kind of chippy a little bit. But this is going to be a potential playoff matchup. It could be a potential Western Conference Finals matchup. Right now, OKC is, they're 3.5 behind San Antonio for the first place in the Western Conference, although they have beaten San Antonio 4 times already, so they know they got that psyche advantage going for them. The Clippers, they're a game and a half behind OKC, so OKC's number 2 and Clippers are number 3. Speaking of OKC, Kevin Durant's streak, his consecutive streak at 40... his consecutive streak of, you know, 20-25. Well, basically his consecutive streak of 25-plus points ended at 41 games. 41 consecutive games he scored 25-plus points. That's pretty amazing. He finished with 23 last night in the winning effort over the Sacramento Kings. Basically, he did not play to start the fourth quarter. The game was pretty much out of reach. There was no way that Sacramento was going to come back and challenge the Thunder and even try and pull off the upset. So, because of that, thanks to the contributions of the likes of Caron Butler, they didn't need him. Russell Westbrook did not play in that game either. He is expected to play tonight. And you can rest assured that they're going to need a lot from KD, from both of those guys, if they're going to have a chance to win this game. And I think that this, like I said, this is a game that has the potential to be a Western Conference Finals. No disrespect to San Antonio, but they have lost 4 times to OKC this season. And I think that's something that it's going to be lingering over their head a little bit going through the playoffs. But one thing I noticed is that no matter who you play sometimes, you might dominate them in the regular season. Playoffs is a whole different bargain. And the San Antonio Spurs, they know that. They've been dealing with this for years. You know, going up against teams in the playoffs that they might have struggled against, but then they eliminated them in the playoffs. So rest assured, they will be ready for OKC or the Clippers. And they might end up facing both teams. You never know. So, you know, may the best team come out of the West. May the better team come out of the West, I should say. So those games are going to be taking place tonight. And going back to the Pistons real quickly, everybody's talking about it. It's been put out there on Yahoo Sports and then the Sports Change website, the AP Sports website. Basically, what's going down is it has been rumored and understood that Joe D is going to step down. And some people will say that the timing couldn't be better. Based off of reports, the reports are basically saying that he is expected to step down as the general manager. This man has been part of the Pistons organization for nearly 30 years, 29 to be exact. It started when he was drafted in 1984. And ever since then, you know, he became a household name on the court and off the court. He was drafted in 1985 by the Pistons. He was the first round 18th pick overall, two-time NBA champion with those Bad Boys, NBA Finals MVP in 89, six-time NBA All-Star, 1993 All-NBA second team, two-time All-NBA third team, four-time NBA All-Defensive first team, NBA All-Defensive second team in 91, NBA All-Rookie First Team in 86. 1994, he was the J. Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award winner. 1996, he was the NBA Sportsmanship Award winner, and he had his jersey number retired. He was an NBA champion as an executive with the Pistons in 04, 10 years ago, and the NBA Executive of the Year Award in 2003. He took over the position in 1999. He went out there and made some classic moves. I'm talking some classic moves that you would have never expected. First of all, the man traded Grant Hill. He traded Grant Hill in 2000 for Ben Wallace and Chucky Atkins. And a lot of people thought he was crazy for that, including me. I was shocked. Like, what? You gonna do that? For real? You got some explaining to do, brother. Yeah. How about that? How about that? How about that? How about that? And to top it off, he traded Jerry Stackhouse in 2002 for Rip Hamilton. A lot of people thought he was crazy for that. Like, what? But who would have thought that those moves would later on pay off and help the Pistons deliver a championship for the first time in nearly 15 years? Who would have thought that? Who would have thunk it? And then drafting guys like Mehmet Okur, Tayshaun Prince, trading for Rasheed Wallace and halfway through the 2003-04 season, bringing back guys like Lindsey Hunter, signing veterans like Eldon Campbell, Darvin Ham, Corliss Williamson. They had some pieces, bringing in Larry Brown as the head coach. And I'm going to get to that portion a little bit later. I want to talk about that personally, because I think that's what did Dumars in, that's what's been doing Dumars in recently. It's been like a tale of two different stories, if you think about it, okay? First of all, prior to the 2000-2001 season, he was the Pistons president of basketball operations. That's the position that he came in and took over in. And what's crazy is that the whole head coaching thing to me, you know, the first 7 years, for the most part, things were solid. Things were solid. I think the last 7 years now have not been so solid. So let's think about it. The first 7 years, he did some fantastic things. Past 7 years, not so fantastic. Not so good, to say the least. And again, this guy traded for Grant Hill. He traded Grant Hill to Chuck Atkins in 2000. Traded Jerome Williams to Toronto for Corliss Williamson in 2001. Drafted Mateen Cleaves. Then traded him for John Berry in 2001 to Sacramento. For 2 years, John Berry was an impeccable key role player coming off the bench for the Pistons, hitting clutch shots at times, making some dramatic, fantastic plays. Judd Buschner, he traded him to Phoenix for Clifford Robinson in 2001. Clifford Robinson became a starter, did did some things, was a good defensive player, a good long-range shooter, nice post player, solid defender. Of course, he traded Jerry Stackhouse to Rick Hamilton in 2002. Michael Curry, he traded for Lindsey Hunter in 2003. So basically, Lindsey Hunter had two stints with Detroit. His first was when he was drafted in 93. He was brought in to be Isaiah Thomas' replacement. He was 10th overall pick. Played with Toronto for a short while, for 1 year, and was traded in 2003 for Michael Curry. And then the big trade, I would have to say the biggest trade, was the Rasheed Wallace blockbuster. Trading guys like Jelko Rabracha, Bob Sura, Chucky Atkins, Lindsey Hunter too, and two first-round picks in a three-team trade that included the Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics. Although Hunter will return to the team a week later because the Celtics waived him from the contract. Rasheed Wallace had played one game with the Atlanta Hawks. One game. And I remember that game quite well, a little bit. It was a game where he traded. He also he played against New Jersey, recorded 20 points, had 6 rebounds and 5 block shots. Then came over to Detroit a few days later. And that was the biggest trade that he made. The biggest trade, because that really put the Pistons over the top. That's what led them to winning the championship in 2004 over the Los Angeles Lakers. And then he also traded Eldon Campbell in the first round pick to Utah Jazz for Carlos Arroyo during the 2004-05 season, although Campbell will come back to the team later that season after being waived by Utah. Now, Isaiah Muhammad, who he brought in as a free agent from San Antonio, he traded. He was brought in to be Ben Wallace's replacement, but he traded him to the Charlotte Bobcats in 2007 for Primo Brezic and Walter Hermann. So he only played one season. They brought in Chris Webber. That didn't really work out too well. And then also, probably arguably the most famous trade they made was Chauncey Billups, Antonio McDyess, and another guy named Cheek Sam for the Allen Iverson deal between the Pistons and Nuggets. McDyess came back a month later. Chauncey Billups went on to play with Carmelo. They formed a 1-2 tandem going so far as to the Western Conference Finals, but losing to the Lakers in 6 games in 2009. And then the other big notable trade that he made was Aaron Aflalo, who he drafted back in 2006-07. Traded him Walter Sharp and a lot of money to Denver for 2011 second-round draft pick, which turned out to be Vernon Ackland. And then his notable draft picks, you know, he drafted guys like Metalcore in 2001, Tayshaun Prince in 2002, Darko Milicic in 2003, although that began to kind of go against him. That was probably the first bad move he made. He also drafted Carlos Delfino in that same draft pick. He drafted Jason Maxfield in 2005, Rodney Stuckey, Aaron Aflalo in 2007, Jonas Jerebko in 2009, Greg Monroe 2010, Brandon Knight in 2011, traded him 2 years later to Milwaukee for Brandon Jennings, and Andre Drummond 2 years ago in 2012, the 9th overall pick. And that, to me right there, that's going to be the future right there. Andre Drummond is going to get the Pistons back to respectability. I've been saying that since day one. I believe he will. He's the only guy that's given me a reason to really watch the Pistons all season. And then the notable signings, you know, again, bringing in guys like Chauncey Billups, Antonio McDyess, Larry Brown as a head coach, Rick Carlisle as a head coach. Rick Carlisle was the coach that got the Pistons back to respectability when they went back to the red, white, and blue uniforms, the original red, white, and blue uniform colors in 2001. Other signings, I would have to say Josh Smith, brought him as a free agent before this season started. Will Bynum. Will Bynum has done some nice things at times. Ben Gordon, that was a disaster. To me, I look at the Josh Smith and the Brandon Jennings signings as the same equivalent as the Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva signings in 2009. Just disastrous. Disastrous. Absolutely disastrous. Paid him a lot of money. It hasn't really panned out. They ended up trading him to Charlotte. He signed a $55 million contract in 2009. I'm thinking, okay, this might work because he did some nice things with the Chicago Bulls, whether he was a starter or he was coming off the bench. He did some really, really nice things. Yeah, well, so much for that. So much for that. Well, we're going to take another quick break. It's going on 7:45 right now. We're taking calls all night, 347-327-9586. When we come back, we got some interesting comments to make about, well, the comments made by Adam, not Pac-Man Jones, of the Baltimore Orioles. We got that. We got some baseball scores, so we're going to update that. We got some NHL scores to update. Season get ready to end. Some teams are already trying to submit themselves in the postseason, so we're going to do that. So we're going to take another quick break. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown on Blog Talk Radio. We are approaching the 8 o'clock p.m. hour. And I got to say, it's a good day to get out, especially up here in Michigan. The weather's getting better. Snow is long but gone. Hopefully we won't get any more anytime soon. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to move on from that. We got some MLB we want to jump into real quickly. We got some news that just broke down about an hour ago. Angels outfielder Josh Hamilton will be sidelined for the next 6 to 8 weeks because of a torn ligament in his left thumb. He was injured during last night's game against Seattle during a hit first slide into first base in the seventh inning. He stayed in the game, but struggled with throwing balls and gripping his bat. So Ben Stewart pinch hit for him in the ninth and struck out with a potential tying run on a base in the 5-3 loss. So it's a tough, that's a big blow for the Angels right now because, you know, Josh Hamilton is such a valued franchise player. And anytime you lose somebody like that on your team, yeah, it's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt you going forward a little bit, but he'll be back. He'll be back soon. And, hopefully the Angels will still be doing some things by the time he gets back into the lineup. But that's a devastating loss for them, for the next 2 months, I should say. Timing is all bad because it's still early into the season. They've only been playing baseball for about 2 weeks, and, you know, you hate to see this happen. So, get well wishes, Josh Hamilton, and come back strong, bro. We're going to update some scores for you real quick. We got some games that have already ended. We got some games that are currently in progress, and we got some games that are going to be taking place later tonight. Well, right now, the games that are in progress right now, we got the New York Mets. They're losing right now in the in Atlanta to the Braves 1-0. They're in the top of the third inning. Miami, they are up on Washington 5-0 at the top of the second inning. They recorded 5 hits, and as a result, they got 5 runs. The Houston Astros are losing in Toronto to the Blue Jays 2-0. That game's in the top of the third inning. The Milwaukee Brewers are losing Philadelphia to the Phillies 3-2. That game's at the top of the second. And the Baltimore Orioles are up 3-2 over the Yankees. The second inning just ended. The third inning's getting ready to start. And I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that little rivalry in just a second. As far as the games that ended earlier today, we had the Oakland A's going to Minnesota and defeating the Twins 7-4. That game lasted in 11 innings. Dan Otero got the win for Oakland at 1-0. Jared Burton got the loss to Minnesota. He's now 0-1 of the season. Oakland got off to a phenomenal start. It all started in the first inning. Josh Donaldson started with a double to deep right center, scoring 1 run. Brandon Moss came in. He singled to left, which produced 2 more runs. And Alberto Colasso added another run to put Oakland up 4-0. And they pretty much were in control until the bottom of the ninth, when they were up 4-2 going into the inning. Eduardo Escobar with a 1-run single, and then Brian Dozier hit a sacrifice fly, which scored Kurt Suzuki, and the game was tied 4-4. Oakland added 3 runs in the 11th inning. Derek Norris provided that with a 3-run shot to deep left, which scored Derek Barton and Alberto Colasso. And as a result, the Oakland A's held on to win. Derek Norris, he went 1-for-2 at the plate, providing that run, well, that big home run, which pretty much sealed the deal. Josh Donaldson had 2 hits at 5 at-bats, and Colasso went 2-for-4 with an RBI. The San Diego Padres lost in Cleveland to the Indians 2-0. Zach McAllister got the win. He's now 1-0. John Axford got his 4th save of the season. Cleveland is trying to do some things right now. With the win, they move up to 5-4. They're only a half game back of the Tigers right now for the Central Division. The Tigers will be taking on the Dodgers tonight. I'll get to that in just a second. And with the loss, the Padres are now 2-6, I believe, 2-6. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. I take that back. I just now noticed this. These two teams played a doubleheader today. Cleveland won the first game, and San Diego won the second. So now, the second game, they won 2-1. Robbie Erlin got the victory, and Houston Street got his third save of the season for San Diego. They're now 3-6, and Cleveland dropped to 5-4. So now they only have a half game back to the Tigers for the Central Division. So, yeah, I just realized that these two teams played a doubleheader today. Wow, how crazy is that? Cincinnati Reds defeated St. Louis Cardinals 4-0. Mike Leake got his first win of the season. He's now 1-1. Shelby Miller drops to 0-2 for St. Louis. Boy, it's been a tough season a little bit for the Cardinals, I guess, a little bit. But it's been a tough season for Cincinnati, actually, a much tougher season. Cincinnati was pretty much in control of this game. Devin Mesoraco provided a two-run homer in the top of the fourth inning. Jay Bruce provided a sacrifice fly, which scored a run for Billy Hamilton. He actually scored twice. That was in the fifth inning, then the top of the ninth inning to put the game away, really. Brandon Phillips with a single, which allowed Billy Hamilton to score. Mike Leake, in the victory, as far as his pitching, he pitched 8 innings, recorded 3 strikeouts, allowed just 4 hits and 1 walk. No runs. 2.45 ERA as the Cincinnati Reds win, getting just their third win of the season. Tampa Bay losing in Kansas City 7-3. Jimmy Guthrie got his second win of the season. He's now 2-0. And that was a good win. It was a really, really good win. A very good win. Very good win. The Chicago White Sox lost a tough one in Colorado to the Rockies 10-4. Rex Brothers got his first win of the season. He's 1-0. Scott Downs is now 0-2 for Chicago. In Texas, losing to Boston, in Boston, at Fenway, 4-2. Andrew Miller got his first win of the season. And Koji Uehara got his second save of the season. Coming up tonight, we got the LA Angels. They're going to take the mound without Josh Hamilton for the first time this season against the Seattle Mariners. That game will take place at 10 p.m. Also at 10 p.m., we got those Tigers taking on the L.A. Dodgers. Anibal Sanchez, who is yet to pitch this season. Well, actually, he's yet to have a win or a loss this season. He has a 4.50 ERA. He will be taking on Josh Beckett. That's going to be a good pitching matchup. Who are the better pitchers? Who are the better upcoming pitchers in the game? That's going to be a good pitching matchup. Those hitters are going to be in for a long one tonight. And then at 10:15 p.m., we have the Arizona D-backs taking on the San Francisco Giants. We got Bronson Arroyo against Tim Lincecum. That's going to be an interesting matchup as well. Interesting pitching matchup. Also at 8:05, in about 10 more minutes, we got the Pittsburgh Pirates taking on the Chicago Cubs. Randy Rodriguez will be looking to get his first win of the season. He's 0-1 against Josh Hamill, who is 1-0 with a 1.35 ERA. Now, I wanted to get to the Orioles and Yankees briefly. The top of the third inning just started. Right now, we got one runner at base. And how ironic that Adam Jones is actually batting right now. Adam Jones has made the headlines a little bit late with some of the comments that he recently said. And he was totally dead on with what he was talking about. If you didn't know what went down between Adam Jones, the Orioles, and the Yankees, basically it all went down to where during the game, after the game, Adam Jones gave one of the more famous post-game rants you will hear as far as fans running onto the field. And this is something we've seen happen in completely in baseball and football. Basically, what happened was two fans ran out into the field between the Orioles and the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. And Adam Jones, who's the Orioles center fielder, had some interesting choice words for him. Basically, quote unquote, this is what he had to say. And what you're about to hear contains some strong language. I think it's idiotic for people to run on the field, and I think the punishment needs to be a lot harsher, and they should let us have a shot to kick them with our metal spikes on because it's stupid. You look like an idiot when you run onto the field. And he went on to say, we don't go to any other event. We don't go to other sporting events to do that to their jobs, but they come to ours and do that. I get it. You're drunk if you want to be on SportsCenter. You're blank, I should say, well, your ass is going to jail with a fine. You might not be allowed to come back to the ballpark. Wow. Interesting comments, huh? Very, very, very interesting comments. And to top it all off, he went on to say, adding to that, I remember a couple years ago, one dude broke his ankle in Baltimore. I was laughing at him. I wish he shattered his femur because it's stupid. It's just plain old stupid. Anybody who does it, I wish the cops would tase the hell out of them. I wish that. I couldn't agree more. Fans should not be running out into the field like that. It's just stupid. You don't do that. In the middle of the game? Now, those fans were escorted off the field by security. This happened during the eighth inning between these two teams. Now, he's been pretty vocal about it, and he has the right to be vocal about that. And I've always said, you know, and I know what it's like to witness fans going out into the field at games because I've seen this happen. I've seen this happen, you know, with fans running out in the field, fans throwing things out the field, doing a lot of different stuff. We've seen this happen in pro sports. We've seen this happen in college sports. We've seen this happen overseas with fans who run out into the field between on fields and courts between games conducted by athletes. Even coaches have done it. So the reason why I say that he's dead on with his comments is fans should not be doing that, especially during a game, because you could get hurt. And you are putting your life at jeopardy and at harm's risk, and you're also putting harm risk revolving the athletes, because they're the ones out there participating in the game. And as a fan, your job is just to sit there and cheer. You're not supposed to run onto the field or court or a hockey rink or a baseball diamond or throw anything for that matter. You're really not even supposed to talk smack to opposing players. You just shouldn't do that. So, I felt like Adam Jones had a right to say what he said, and I'm glad that he said it. I'm glad he said that. That needed to be said. So, with that being mind, I think that the MLB might want to consider really adding some increased security to make sure that fans don't do stupid stuff like that when you're running out into the field. You're jeopardizing yourself. Bottom line. And you have to take action. And I think this falls squarely on Bud C. League and everybody in the MLB front office. This falls on them. Completely. So, that being said, they need to take the right steps and go in a good direction and say, hey, you know what? We need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Because the players, that could be anybody you're running for any particular situation, and you don't even know what the heck is going on. So what are you supposed to do the next time something like this happens? So as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad that he said what he said. Now, this game took place last night between these two teams, and like I said, I'm glad that Adam Jones said what he said, and he had a right to say that. He was absolutely right in saying that. So I applaud him. I give him props. I give him mad props. Now, the Orioles won last night's game at Yankee Stadium 14-5. And it was just crazy. It was just crazy how this whole situation erupted the way that it did. Just absolutely erupting the way that it did. And if you want to know more about the quote, you can go to ESPN. You can check out ESPN's account. Go to their website. Check out their account on YouTube. Because trust me, he said a lot more than what I just told you. A whole lot more. So big ups to him. Well, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more Joe Dumars. We got some NHL scores to update. And more NBA. And even much more than that. Gotcha. Even much more than that. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Just after 8 p.m., and we got some NHL that we want to break down for you real fast. We got one game currently in progress between the Montreal Canadiens and the Chicago Blackhawks, the defending Stanley Cup champs. Well, it's between the Canadiens and the Blackhawks, I'm sorry. That game is scoreless. It's in the first period. They're approaching the end of the first period. Coming up, we got the Red Wings, who are looking to fight for their playoff lives. That game, they're taking on the Pittsburgh Penguins. That game is just getting ready to tip off shortly. Coming up at 8:30, we got Columbus at Dallas. And at 10 p.m., we got the L.A. Kings against the Calgary Flames. And at 10:30, we got the San Jose Sharks against the Anaheim Ducks. And as usual, I always like to do this. I got to give hockey its props, because hockey is getting ready to heat up now. And when I say heat up, I'm talking about postseason. Right around the corner, baby. Right around the corner. Okay. The standings go as right now, we have all the teams that are right now in the playoffs. Right now we have, in the Eastern Conference, we got Boston, Montreal, Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, New York Rangers, and the Philadelphia Flyers. Those are six teams that are in right now. If the Red Wings win tonight, they are expected to clinch another playoff berth. They've been making the playoffs forever, and I hope that they get in again this year. I honestly hope they do. They have 90 points right now, which right now, out of all the teams that are trying to fight for that for two of the final playoff spots, they have the most right now. They got 90 points. Columbus Blue Jackets, they have 89. Those are the top two teams right now. It looks like those are going to be the top two teams that get in. In the Western Conference, we got seven teams right now that have already clinched playoff spots. Now, in the Eastern Conference, I want to go back to this real quickly. The Boston Bruins have already clinched the number one seed. They have 114 points. Nobody was going to catch them in the East, so they pretty much got that under wraps. As far as the Western Conference, the playoff spots that have been clinched, you got St. Louis, Colorado, Chicago, Minnesota, Anaheim, San Jose, and Los Angeles. Just need one more team to get in, and it looks like it's going to be either Phoenix or Dallas. Now, both teams have three games left. Even though Phoenix, they've already lost five straight games, and Dallas, they just won their last game that they played, and they've gone 7-3 in their last 10. Phoenix has been shooting themselves in the foot with the losses, but just some of the mistakes that they've been making. So with that being said, they need to run the table, find a way to run the table, and win these last three games and hope that Dallas loses their last three games in order for that to get in. So that's basically what that's looking like in the NHL playoffs. And again, you know, positions still have to be determined as far as who's going to be, you know, certain seeds, you know, 2, 3, 4. We know Boston's going to be number one in the East, so they pretty much have that under wraps. Like I said, in Eastern Conference, Detroit and Columbus, they're on the top. They're in the top two. Looks like they're going to be the two teams that most likely get it. And in the West, you got Minnesota. Got Dallas. And you got Phoenix. So now going back to the Western Conference, and I got to check this real quickly. Minnesota, they clinched the spot, so they got the seventh spot right now. And Dallas and Phoenix are fighting each other for those last two playoff spots. The Detroit-Pittsburgh game is getting ready to tip off. Check that on your local Fox Sports stations. For those of you who are hockey fans, and if you're not, well, you can't say I didn't try to help you out, because, you know, because I'm big on hockey a little bit now, you know. And I got to say, I've been enjoying the races, you know, as far as who's going to be in the playoffs and who's not going to be in the playoffs. So we got that going, and, you know, things are heating up. The Vancouver Canucks, they were eliminated from the playoffs just recently, just a few nights ago. They had decided to make their former captain, Trevor Linden, their president of hockey operations. This announcement actually came a day after they fired their president and general manager, Mike Gillis. Just for Trevor Linden's background, he played 19 seasons in the NHL, mostly with Vancouver, led them to the 94 Stanley Cup Finals, where they lost in 7 games to the New York Rangers. He scored 375 goals and added 492 assists in 1,382 career NHL games. And he's looking forward to taking over this position, and good luck to him, you know, trying to get the Vancouver Canucks back to respectability. It's a good hire. Sounds like it's a good hire. It sounds like they're going in the right direction. You always want to bring in guys that are close to the organization, especially as players. So it's a good step in the right direction. A very good step in the right direction. Speaking of the Pittsburgh Penguins, their defenseman Chris Letang is set to return after a stroke that he suffered. It looks like he's going to take the ice tonight. The 26-year-old, he hasn't played in over 2 months. The last time he played was back on January the 27th. And then 2 days later, he suffered a stroke after feeling dizzy and nauseous. He was cleared by doctors several weeks ago and convinced general manager Ray Sherrill he was okay during a series of conversations while traveling with the team on a road trip last week. So I'm happy to see him back in. You're always glad to see guys feeling healthy and feeling good about themselves, you know, and ready to get back to doing what they enjoy doing. Just got to take it easy on yourself a little bit. But, you know, strokes are no walk in the park, man. That's some serious business. But it's good to see him back playing and doing what he loves doing. And I would say that to anybody in his position that's gone through what he's going through. And I've done it before, and I will continue to do so. I want to go back to the NBA, because, again, we've been talking about the whole Joe Dumars thing. Like I said, it looks like he's on his way out the door. And it also seems like they're going to be moving in a different step, in a different direction. So the way I see it, I think that this is something that both parties need to do. They both need to move on, period. Now, the Pistons, they've won 2 straight, believe it or not. They had a win against Boston where they came back. They came back and won that game 115-111 on Saturday night. And then Tuesday, last night, at Atlanta against the Hawks team trying to wrap up that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, they pulled off the upset, and they did it without former Hawk Josh Smith. They won the game 102-95. Rodney Stuckey had a big game. Greg Monroe played well. Andre Drummond played phenomenal like he always does. They're on the road in Cleveland tonight. They're currently losing this game 23-13. Well, they're currently losing right now. And fans had just been lobbying for Joe Dumars to either get the axe or to throw in the towel. And it looks like they're going to get their wish. Now, I'm a guy, I've been saying all along, I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Eventually, some of the moves that you made come back to bite you, especially with the whole coaching changes. This is something I wanted to talk about going back to earlier when I brought this up. If you notice, if you just notice, you know, the situation as far as like piston coaches and things like that, just think about this. The consistency, there's been a problem with that. A real serious problem with that. I can't recall the last coach that lasted more than 3 years with this team. 3. That's not a whole lot. It's not. That's not a whole lot in terms of, like, a certain number of coaches. Just think about this. Since Joe Dumars came over into the front office prior to 2000-2001 season, the first coach he hired was a guy named George Gervin. Coached there for 2 seasons. Actually, he only coached there for 1 season. Only 1 season. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. He coached, just to give you a background on George Gervin, he came over in 2000. And he finished with, he had 46 wins and 60 losses. with the team, coaching just 106 games with the team. So he actually took over after Alvin Gentry was fired. Came over and was the interim head coach. And he ended up being fired in 2001 at the end of the 2000-2001 season. He took over for Alvin Gentry, and Alvin Gentry was the coach when Joe Dumars played his final years with the team. And what ended up happening was, after he let go, he moved on to San Antonio and became an assistant coach. But anyway, after George Gervin was let go, they brought in Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle coached basically for 2 years. He basically coached 2 years, two seasons. And he coached relatively well. Went to the playoffs twice. In fact, he was the first coach to take the Pistons to the playoffs since, he was the first guy to take the Pistons to back-to-back postseason appearances since Doug Collins did, from between 95 and 98. Rick Carlisle coached 27 playoff games with Pistons, had 12 wins and 15 losses. He was the 2001-2002 NBA Coach of the Year. Effectively winning it over Byron Scott, who brought the New Jersey Nets back to respectability. And the Nets were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, while the Pistons were number two. He did a complete turnaround. They went from losing 50 games to winning 50 in back-to-back years. He was fired in 2003. They brought in Larry Brown, who resigned from the Philadelphia 76ers in 03. Larry Brown also coached two seasons, but he coached in more playoff games. He had 48. 31-17 in the postseason with the Pistons, including the NBA championship in 2004. He gets let go. They bring in Flip Saunders. He didn't coach no... He actually had the longest stint since Joe Dumars has been in front office, because he coached 3 years. He coached 246 with the team. They had 30 playoff wins and 21 playoff losses. He coached 176 playoff games. That's the most a Pistons coach had coached since Chuck Daly. Think about that. And that's not really, to be honest with you, that's not a whole lot of games if you think about it. That's not a whole lot. Compared to Chuck Daly, who coached 738 games. But anyway, he gets let go. They bring in Michael Curry, and this is where the coaching carousel really becomes a disaster. Michael Curry coached one season, and he was the last coach to take the Pistons to the postseason. They were swept by Cleveland in 2009 in the first round. That was the whole Allen Iverson debacle, the trade and everything. And this is when players started to kind of rebel against Michael Curry, including most notably Rip Hamilton, who was not happy about being benched at times by Curry in favor of Iverson, who they elected to start along with, you know, the likes of Rodney Stuckey and some of the other point guards that they had on the roster. That didn't sit too well with Rip Hamilton, and eventually he ended up being let go. But they fired Michael Curry after one season. He had 39 wins and 43 losses. They brought in John Kuster, who was an assistant, a former assistant on the coach on the Pistons staff when they won a championship back in 04. They brought him over. He coaches two seasons. Again, just like Carlisle and Larry Brown, only two seasons. Disastrous. 57 wins, 107 losses. And this was at the time where players were really rebelling against him. Guys like Rodney Stuckey didn't have great relationships with him. And it just exploded. It was just a complete disaster. So they bring over Lawrence Frank, and a lot of people say, okay, Lawrence Frank, that's a decent hire. Lawrence Frank, you know, he coached the Nets to the playoffs before. At least he'll try to get the Pistons back to respectability. Nope. That didn't work either. In fact, Lawrence Frank came over and took over in 2011. And it just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. In fact, in 2012-2013 season, they started out 0-8. He was the third coach in the history of the NBA to start at least 0-8 with two separate franchises. He did it with the Pistons, and he did it with the Nets. And so it was just bad. It was just a bad situation. And he went 54 and 94 in two seasons and was let go immediately following the 2012-2013 season. And now he's coaching over as an assistant with the Brooklyn Nets behind Jason Kidd, who once played for him in New Jersey. So they bring in Maurice Cheeks, and that just tells you all that you need to know. Maurice Cheeks didn't even last a full season. 50 games, 21-29, let go. And now John Laurier is now their head coach. So let's rewind the clocks back. Let's review, shall we? Since Joe Dumars came over as an executive for the Pistons, they have had nine head coaches. Well, actually, Ken, because when he came over, Alvin Gentry was still a coach technically, even though he got fired, but George Gervin was the first guy that Joe Dumars hired. And now he's not there no more. And he's not there. And that tells you all that you need to know about that situation. That tells you everything that you need to know. And so, once again, the Pistons are most likely going to be going into next season looking for yet another head coach. And I've already said, bring in Lionel Hollins. If not him, take a shot at George Karl. Those two guys will be the best two coaching candidates available. Why not bring one of those guys in? Because they need it. They need something. And right now they are losing by 30 in Cleveland. A team that is just about as much disarray as they are. They're losing by 30. And so this team needs some discipline. They need some leadership. They need something. They're lacking so much right now. And it ain't talent, because they got a lot of talent on the team. Andre Drummond, Greg Monroe, Josh Smith, Peyton Siever, Rodney Stuckey, Will Bynum, Kyle Singer, Jonas Jerebko. They got talent. You can't dispute that. But it's one thing to have talent, and it's another to not have the guy to put you over the hump and be an effective leader. They just don't have, they have little next to no leadership amongst the players. You can't ask Chauncey Billups to be the only leader on the team as far as the roster of players. They need more of that. When you're a young team, you're trying to find your identity, there's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some growing pains. And like I said earlier, the Josh Smith, Brandon Jennings addition is no different than the Ben Gordon, Charlie Villanueva signing. You pay too much money to get those guys, and they're not really doing much. And they've already been eliminated by playoff contention, so this will be 6 years just about since they last made the postseason. So I look at it as, you know what, something's got to give. And I'm not just talking in front office, I'm talking the roster again. I think some of these guys have got to go. I will get rid of Villanueva, I will get rid of Jennings. I would trade Josh Smith and bring in some guys that can come in and really help this team. And it's going to start at the top. I think Joe Dumars possibly parting ways would be the best thing for this team going forward. It just has to be done. These last 7 years have been disaster piss. It's been the lowest I've seen this organization since before Chuck Daly's arrival. From the late 70s until the early 80s, they had a period of 7 years where they didn't make the playoffs and they didn't do anything. They had coaches like Bob Kauffman, Dick Vitale, Richie Adubato, and Scotty Robertson. Those guys never coached the Pistons to the playoffs. Chuck Daly came in 83, and he was by far the best coach in franchise history and had the best years with that organization as far as winning back-to-back championships, being the bad boys, and doing what they've been doing. What more do you need to know? Now, speaking of the bad boys, a week from tomorrow, there will be an ESPN 30 for 30 documentary that's going to take place on there's going to be a documentary that's going to take place with this team. So be on the lookout for that. That game should be broadcast like on ESPN and ESPN2 or something. So check that out. Well, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this. We're going to update some NBA scores for you, some more updates, some MLB games, and we're going to talk about this. The NBA season is getting ready to come to an end by next week, and so we got some games that are in progress right now, including the Pistons getting wowed by Cleveland by 30. Yeah. These days, being a Pistons fan is not the most rewarding thing in the world. But anyway, this is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Time is just a little bit after 8:30. And, boy, we got some more NBA to update for you real quickly, some scores real quickly. The Miami Heat are currently up by 1 point on the Memphis Grizzlies, 32-31. The first quarter just ended. That's the first of a two-game doubleheader on ESPN. You can switch over and watch that game right now while you're tuning in to the last 30 minutes of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We got the Chicago Bulls up on the Minnesota Timberwolves, 26-25. The second quarter just started there. The Indiana Pacers, without their five starters tonight who are sitting out this game, are taking on the Milwaukee Bucks, and they are up 28-27. The second quarter just started in that game. The Phoenix Suns are up 23-20 over the New Orleans Pelicans. The second quarter just started in that game. At halftime, we got the Boston Celtics losing in Atlanta to the Hawks, 56-51. Third quarter, halfway through, the Philadelphia 76ers are losing in Toronto to the Raptors, 78-74. Also in the third quarter, we got the Charlotte Bobcats up on the Washington Wizards, 60-59. And also in the third quarter, we have the Brooklyn Nets. They're down by one to the Orlando Magic, 69-68. And I just talked about this, the Pistons. Well, they were losing by 30, but they're down by 22. Trying to make it a little bit more respectable, I guess. But they're losing to Cleveland 80-58. And I also want to take, I also want to go back to the documentary I was talking about. Next Thursday, April the 17th, on ESPN will be the ESPN 30 for 30 Bad Boys documentary, narrated by none other than longtime Pistons fan and big time Detroiter, Kid Rock. How ironic right now, huh? Anyway, you can check out the trailer for on the ESPN, on ESPN's website. You can also check it on their account on YouTube. And I'm going to be tuning in to watch that. I'm going to be tuning in. These guys, to this day, they are unapologetic for their tactics and how they were winning games back then. And, of course, Chuck Daly, the longtime coach, no longer here with us, but his presence is still going to be missed. And it will be missed continuously forever. But you got guys like Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, of course, John Sally, Bill Laimbeer, Rick Mahorn, Dennis Rodman, Denny the Michael A. Johnson, James Edwards. Those are the bad boys. All props goes to general manager Jack McCloskey. He was the one who made the moves. He was the one who drafted guys like Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars, traded for guys like Bill Laimbeer. He did it. He did it. So that documentary will be taking place on ESPN next Thursday, 8 p.m. on the actual ESPN station. Not ESPN2 or ESPN News or ESPNU. The actual ESPN station. If you have DirecTV, it's channel 206. And I will be watching. I will definitely be watching. Definitely watching. So, and again, going back to the whole Joe Dumars situation, like I said, sometimes certain relationships, nothing lasts forever. All errors come to an end. Some errors last longer than others. Some errors last a little bit too long. Some errors are a little bit too short. But the bottom line is that these last 7 years have been just absolutely pathetic, and it's time to move on. Changes need to be made. And I think that in this case, something's got to give. Something's got to give. So with that being in mind, I think it's best if both parties move on. It might be the smart thing to do if you think about it. It just might be the smart thing to do. It just might be the best thing to do. So I think that because of that, I think that in this case, regardless if he does it now or if he does it at the end of the season, because the Pistons aren't going to make the playoffs, they're done. I think we should never forget Joe D's contributions, at least his first 7 years as a member of the front office. We can't deny that he made some sacrifices. I mean, he made some bold moves trading the likes of Grant Hill, Jerry Stackhouse, and bringing in Rasheed Wallace, and signing Chauncey Billups, who was a journeyman for much of his career, a guy that a lot of teams that he had previously played for, they kind of gave up on him. And he was bouncing from team to team. And Rip Hamilton, I knew who Rip Hamilton was going back to his days at UConn. Back then, I was a UConn basketball fan. And when they won the championship in 99, I think, oh, yeah, Rip is going to be a star in this league. I never thought that he would be in the Pistons uniform, though. Rip went from winning a college championship, drafted by the Wizards, playing with Michael Jordan, and then coming over to the Pistons. Pretty big. Pretty big. He cemented himself legacy-wise with this organization. Even though the final years here for him were not very long-lasting, especially getting a lot more technical fouls, becoming a younger Rasheed Wallace, basically, and having issues with his coaches and not being comfortable coming off the bench. And he shouldn't have been. He shouldn't have been. I didn't blame him for being upset about that situation. So I felt like in this case, we should remember Joe Dumars at his exit, whenever that's going to be, for his major contributions that he made. I'm not going to forget that. He got this team back to being respectable again. They went to 6 straight Eastern Conference Finals. 6. That's a major deal. And in between that, they went to 2 straight finals. They won the first, should have won the second, didn't happen. They should have gotten back to the finals the following 2 years after. But it is what it is. So I think that in this case, we should remember him for doing the right thing. Instead of bashing him for the wrong things that we did. We should not treat him like we did Matt Millen, because Matt Millen did nothing right. The only smart move that Matt Millen made was when he drafted Calvin Johnson. Other than that, everything else stuck. And now looking back at it, the only 2 guys that Millen drafted, Calvin Johnson and Dominic Rolo, they're the only 2 guys that are still on the team. The only 2 guys still on the team. So I look at it like, you know what? Joe Dumars should not get that same treatment. Although people have been comparing the 2 over the last 6 or 7 years, rightfully so, because it just seems like, yes, they've been making a lot of smart moves. Joe Dumars was a guy that was making a lot of veteran moves, bringing in a lot of veteran players. And eventually we all knew that this team was going to hit a wall due to those aging players. Guys like Allen Iverson, Chris Webber, guys who are at the end of their career, Dale Davis, you know, those type of players, Tracy McGrady. T-Mac could no longer go. He was beat up, completely beat up. And you knew that his time was coming to an end. So I kind of felt like whether Joe Dumars leaves this year or whether he doesn't leave this year, I think that in this case, we should take the time to appreciate the good things that he did here. He did a lot of good things here. He made some tough moves, but those moves, for the most part, paid off, especially his first 6 or 7 years in the front office. And so the way I see it, I think that we should take the time to just reflect on that and remember, hey, he's going to be remembered gracefully here. And so I just look at it like I'm going to miss him for that. And it sounds like he's leaving now. It kind of has that psychic feel to it. And I think considering the way that the Pistons are playing right now, they know that it's over. They also feel like, you know what, it's a distraction now. It's hurting them. It is literally, literally hurting them. And it should. This team needs a kick in the butt. A real swift kick. Right in the backside. So, that's how I feel about the situation. And I also feel that, whatever Joe Dumars does, you know, after his time here with the Pistons, you know, I hope that he continues to live a great life. Because he's a good guy. He's a good man. He's a very phenomenal human being. He cares for a lot of people. He cares about his community. He cares about the organization. And he would do whatever it takes to win. So I feel like, you know what, I'm going to remember him more about what he did as a player and as a front office executive, the positive moves they made, the good moves that translated into win the championship, you know, and accomplishments, division championships, conference championships, you know, playoff appearances, accolades, awards, all-star appearances by players. That's what I'm going to remember. I'm going to pull out my 2003-04 championship DVD, and I'm going to watch it. I think I'm going to watch it tomorrow. I might watch it tonight just to remember the good old days, man. It's been 10 years since they won their last championship. 10 years. And I remember before then, before 04, we were starving for another one. Of course, Michael Jordan and the Bulls had the dynasty. The Lakers, they won their championship. I'm thinking, man, we could just get something going. And we did. The first year, we lost to the Celtics in the second round. I was pissed off about that. The following year, we were swept by New Jersey in the Eastern Conference. And we had the home court. And finally, the following year, we turned the corner. And it really took that Rasheed Wallace deal for that to go down. I was glad that that move was made. So, I was happy about that. Well, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the show. Rocket is going to let you know his whereabouts, what's going on with him these next couple weeks, some shout-outs, and we're going to end the show on a good note. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We're nearing the end of our broadcast. We've got about 10 more minutes left of airtime, so I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. You know, you're probably too scared to call, but, you know, it's your life. Do what you want to do with it. We got a little bit of NFL news to pass along real quickly. Buffalo Bills have just signed former Harvard punter Jake Dombrowski. He has been a free agent since completing his four-year career at Harvard in 2012, and he will be giving a shot to compete for the punting job held by veteran Brian Moorman, who was just re-signed to a one-year deal back in January. He played in 31 games with the Crimson, and he earned first-team Ivy League honors as a senior. The Redskins, The Panthers announced that they've re-signed unrestricted free agent defensive tackle Colin Cole to a one-year contract. Financial terms were not released as of today. The return of him means that they have kept the entire defensive line rotation from last season intact. And so Cole has started 13 games last season for Carolina, second-ranked defense, and helped the team to the NFC South Championship. So he had 15 tackles, one sack, and three quarterback pressures. Yes, he missed all of 2011-2012 seasons with an ankle injury. So at 33, he's played in 99 career games in 8 seasons with 47 starts. Now, going to the Redskins, their defensive lineman, Brandon Moore of the Redskins, has been suspended for the first 4 games of this upcoming season by the NFL for violating the league's substance abuse policy. Here we go again. Seriously? Come on now. This dude has yet to even play a down in the NFL. He was on the practice squads of 2 teams last year, San Diego and Denver. He signed with Kansas City, was cut, and now he's picked up by the Redskins. This guy was, he was not even drafted last year. He came out of Texas, though, but he is eligible for off-season activities and can play in preseason games, but come on now. Come on. Come on. Now, the NFL has levied 10 drug-related suspensions against Redskins players since 2011. Defensive players Rob Jackson, Jarvis Jennings sat out 4 games last year, and tight end Fran Davis, who's now a free agent, is suspended indefinitely. Come on, fellas, get your heads together. Cut out the foolishness. This is getting stupid. Come on now. Get your heads out of your asses. Oh my goodness, stuff like that really ticks me off, man. It really does. I can't even... I'm not even going to go there. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it tonight. I'm not going to do that. It's been a good show. I'm not really going to go off on these guys. Let their punishment take care of that. But going back to the Pistons one more time, they're in Cleveland tonight. They're losing badly. They got 3 more games left. They're at Chicago on Friday. Next Sunday, they host Toronto. That's their final home game of the regular season. And they close out next Wednesday at OKC. Maybe OKC will rest Durant and Westbrook and some of their starters. Quite possibly, especially if they have a certain position in the Western Conference locked up. Division, you know, the number 2 seed, because I don't think they're going to catch San Antonio. And they don't need to. They feel like they can beat them. They beat them 4 times this season. They swept them. So let's see what happens in the Western Conference Finals, assuming that it's both of those 2 teams. I can tell you right now, the Clippers might have something to say about it. Might have something to say about it. Even Portland or Golden State might have something to say about it. So the Pistons have 4 regular season games to close out, and that's pretty much it. So, but yeah, we are coming to the end of our broadcast, and I just want to say thank you to everybody who tuned in tonight. Next week, we'll be back on air again, and we're going to have, and normally I don't do this, I don't always talk about, you know, the next show, what it's going to be about, but next week, we are going to preview the NBA and even the NHL postseason. We're going to do that, so get out your pen and paper, get ready to jot some notes, because it's going to go down next Wednesday. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. It's going to go down. Also, speaking of next week, now, there's no comedy shows for yours truly this week. I decided to take a week off, you know, try and come up with some new material, work on some things, and just look towards the future. But next week, I'm expected to be, next Monday night, you can possibly check me out at the New Way Bar in Ferndale. in Ferndale, Michigan. For all you Michigan people out there familiar with the territory, the area, it's not officially been put out there. It's just a regular open mic to show up, go up, that type of thing. Next Tuesday, you can catch me at the New Dodge Lounge in Hamtramck. I went there 2 weeks ago. Last week, actually, last Tuesday, had a great time. Went there and tore the stage up with a lot of my friends. We had fun. It was a great time. And next Thursday, I will definitely be at Laugh Tracks Comedy Club for sure in Novi. So you might see me do at least two shows next week, like I did last week, maybe even three. So we'll see about that. Also, I was just recently selected to be in a short student movie called 90 Days. I'll be playing an EMT. Yeah, an EMT. How about that? How about that? So I'm looking forward to that. We're supposed to start shooting this month, and there's also going to be some other movies that are going to be starting shooting this month. So be on the lookout, y'all. Rocket Sports Breakdown is in full effect. I got three movies coming out this year. The King, that's going to be coming out this summer. The Goblin Lady, that'll be coming out this fall. After the documentary, that's expected to come out probably either by August or September of this year. So please be on the lookout for that as well. As again, once we close out this show, or as we close out this show, thank you for everyone who tuned in. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. So until next time, take care of yourselves. Love one another. God bless you. Keep doing what you do. Shout out to everybody. Many blessings to all of you. To all my peoples, you know who you are. Take care of yourselves. See you next time. Hit Rocket up. Facebook.com/ChristianRocketAdams. Take care. Get ready for a power trip.